Welcome to the latest series of the Women Who Sport podcast. This series is made possible by the support of Boob Armour, who make protective inserts that fit inside a sports bra and protect breast tissue while training or competing. The inserts are lightweight, comfortable and suitable for all sporting activity. Check them out at www.boobarmour.au or through the links on the Women Who Sport social media channels. We're incredibly lucky to be working with a company that are leading the way with the protective equipment offered to female athletes, giving everyone the confidence to participate in sport.
On today's episode, the last one of the Big Conversation series, we're joined by Hannah Miley. She's a three-time Olympian, having represented Team GB at Beijing, London and Rio. Hannah later announced her retirement in December 2021 from swimming, but is still very much involved in the sport, leading the way in a campaign to break the stigma around the language when talking about periods, Say Period campaign. We're super excited to have her on board and unpack not only her swimming career, but the period campaign too.
Yeah, absolutely loved this episode with Hannah. She was amazing and just so excited to share it with you. And it is the last one of this 10-part series. We actually made it this far.
I know, we made it. Buzzing, so many amazing conversations and incredible athletes and influencers with Kurt, like we've had on board. So a really awesome series, and we hope that you've been able to take little like nuggets away from it and enjoyed it as much as we have.
If you did listen to the series, like, message us. We absolutely love to hear from people that have tuned into the podcast. So yeah, thank you for listening. And we should also say another big thank you to our sponsor, Boob Armour. They have been absolutely amazing. We always bang on about them. And actually, we speak a little bit about breast health on this podcast, so it's such a relevant one. But they make inserts that go inside your sports bra. They protect your breasts while you're competing. They give women the confidence to compete without having to hold back. And they're just an amazing company. And they're now actually, stocked in Scotland in Greaves. So you can access Boob Armour wherever you live in the world. Highs and lows.
Highs and lows. Okay. Our low. We're going to go a joint one here, I think, after discussing it. Okay, so the period photo that popped up, I hope I'm pronouncing her surname right, but Emma Pallant, the world duathlon champion, world aquathon champion and silver medalist Ironman athlete, she posted a photo on her own Instagram of her being on a period. Super topical for today's episode, but again, I thought, what an awesome thing to do. A huge move. It's a natural thing. Every woman gets one, or pretty much, or experiences some sort of menstrual cramp or symptom or whatever it is. And I think, fair play to you. You're literally, it's literally a fact of life. And you do an event that lasts hours. It's impossible to change your tampon, probably, because you don't have it on you. It's weight, et cetera, et cetera. And some of the comments she's received are just bang out of order, really.
Yeah, that it's basically a photo of her competing, and you can see that she's like had an issue with her period leading through the, what, I don't know what it's called, that,
like, trisuit.
Their trisuit that they compete in. And people were, I'd shared it and been like, you could have cropped this better and stuff like that. But the big negative there is the stigma that still surrounds periods. But also, I think it's been a massively positive one in terms of she was like, no, like, this is natural. This is what happens to women. Like, she's tried all these different products, blah, blah, blah. And like, I think it's stimulated a lot of really good conversation at the back, because it's true, like, it's something that's happening to half the population, and yet it still feels like we have to hide it.
Yeah, no, I know, it's a real shame, but hats off to the gal, such a cool move.
And another one that we had was, we found Modi Body, if I'm saying that right, swimsuits that are swimsuits that basically you can wear on your period and you don't have to wear a tampon. I think this is just good in terms of like the products that we're starting to see for periods now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I would be intrigued to wear one. I think I'd be a bit uncomfortable, but do you know what? It's good that you're getting products out there. Like, we speak about a little bit about it on the pod, that actually a lot of female sports gear is just men's kit designed a bit smaller, because what, only a small proportion of sports research is done on females. So there's still so much more to unpack in terms of our kit, our training, how we manage our cycle, or actually if we got a pair of trainers or rugby boots that were fitted and designed for the female anatomy, the differences that they could make. So I think it's really cool that we're starting to see these specialized products come out on the market.
Absolutely. Cool. For the final time, final time this season.
I mean, this season. Yeah, we've still got more seasons to come.
We're coming back. For the final time, let's get Sharon Martin on and get into the episode with Hannah.
Okay, so just to ease in, you've got the aux cable. This is going to be a two-parter. Pre-race, what did you listen to? Now you've sort of like hung your swimsuit up. Is that actually even what swimmers say? Like, we'll always be like, oh, hanging our boots up.
Yeah,
hang your goggles up.
Yeah, hang your goggles up, hang your swimsuit up, hang your cap up. There's got a couple of items you can use.
Okay, we'll go with that then. And then the next part will be, like, you're on the road doing bits and bobs with your campaign and things. What's your kind of go-to song for the road?
Ooh, okay. So pre-race, it varied because I always try to like refresh my playlist. So it was never really the same songs, but I loved going for songs that were kind of not mainstream, stuff that you wouldn't really hear on the radio, because I would play those songs to death. So it would vary from ex-ambassador's Jungle.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. To Elephant Sessions, Colors, or was kind of like my favorite one as well. Got Fleetwood Mac, The Chain.
Nice. You got bangers.
So it was quite an eclectic mix. And it would just be one or two of those songs that I'd be like, right, these are the songs, and they would just be on repeat. And yeah, and it was more about whether it was the words or sometimes it was just the music. And that was why I quite liked Elephant Sessions or Lindsay Sterling, where it was purely just music. There weren't really any words. And I would just feel the vibe of the song. Or sometimes I needed the words. And as I say, Jungle from ex-ambassadors was normally the one that would kind of get me in the right zone. Or Born Ready by Zaid Wolf.
Songs with a sort of like beat to it. Was that part of like... Did you use psychology for that, or was it just something that actually over the years you're like, nah, this is the sort of thing that I need?
It was just feel. Swimming's kind of, even though it's quite technical, it's an overhead sport. So your arms are always up here. So you're not really ever looking to where your hands are going. So you have to rely on each stroke feels like and how it propels and pulls you through the water. So it's repetition of movement, but you know when it feels good and you know when it doesn't feel good, whether you feel like you're moving forwards or you just feel like a stone and it's just not going well. So there's an element of feel which seems a bit airy-fairy, but it's kind of a core part of being the swimmer. Because if I missed, say, like a week of being in the water, so when we have like our summer break, we normally get like 2 weeks off. It feels awful getting back in the water because all of a sudden you're very hyper aware of, oh, I can feel the water on my face. I feel my limbs are all over the place. And it takes a little bit of time to kind of get that sort of neuromuscular pathways to kind of fire back in and get back into that routine. So for me, it's about trying to switch off the noise in your head to kind of zone it in. So instead of being like, right, high elbow, catch, pull, breathe, rotate, core, kick, the song just allows you to go into that zone where you just go into instinct mode and you naturally feel, because that's the whole point of training. And I love the fact that the Americans call it practice instead of training. They say, oh, you know, we're going to go to practice, because you are practicing what you're going to do in a competition. So like the words of Yoda from Star Wars, you know, don't think, just do. And it is very much like that. So for me, music helps me just get into that mindset of just not overthinking, feel the music, enjoy the vibe of it. And then that just kind of stays with you going into the race. And also there's a bit of ego, a bit of peacocking, you know, kind of getting into that kind of mindset of, I'm going to perform the best that I can.
So. Yeah, there's It's certainly doing. You see, like, the swimmers all come out with their headphones on, the coats on. I'm like, I always wonder. I wonder what they've got on.
Yeah, and everybody's got their own kind of set playlist, whether it's like rap songs or the current charts, or you just have the song that just you get, like you just connect with the songs. And for me, as I say, it had to be songs that I don't hear often on the radio, because I do overplay them quite significantly.
Oh, love it. Brilliant. Okay, then. It's got a little bit of a flavour for what music you're into, what makes you tick. We'll move a bit more into your swimming. You've been quoted to say in one of the articles, "I'm not the biggest, I'm not the strongest, but I'll be the hardest working athlete." Is that something that you have found through your career? Because you come in at what, 5'4"?
165 centimeters, so on a good day, 5'5".
We'll call it 5'5".
Yep.
As a swimmer, like, is height super important? And like, did you find that a big barrier through your career?
It can be helpful, because if I'm up against some of the big Amazon swimmers who are like 5'9", 5'10", they've already got quite, you know, a fair few inches up on me, which means that their reach, so if I was head to head with them, their arm stroke is already ahead of me. So being taller does help. But my mindset as a youngster was, because I knew I was always going to be the underdog kind of coming uphill by not being a typical shape for a swimmer, I kind of felt, well, what I lacked in height, I had to gain in attitude and drive. So I kind of took a lot of inspiration from the Japanese athletes, because they are tiny. I remember going there racing once, and I raced, I think, was it like 200 breaststroke? And I think in one of the heats, I was like the tallest. It was incredible. And to be fair, I was the oldest as well in the heat. They were like so young. But their technique is just sublime. So it's like, okay, well, what I lack in height and size, I can make up for in technique and motivation and drive. And the benefits of being smaller is that, okay, going around the walls, there's less of me, so I should be able to get faster turns. Also, because there's less of me, I should be able to recover quicker. So I hope I should be able to do, you know, more back-to-back tougher training sessions. So I always try to look at the positives in something, and that size kind of didn't depict all. Swimmers have kind of got a bit of a reputation of being shaped like a spatula as well. I kind of feel like front on quite wide, broad, like a spatula, but then when you turn the side on, there's nothing there. That's kind of the best description for it. So yeah, I always knew that I wasn't your kind of typical shape. I got hyperextendable elbows as well, so they bend the wrong way. But I kind of put a lot of what I did in swimming through Pilates and also the land work. And I tried to do as many other activities on land, because swimming is a weird sport in a sense that it is the complete opposite to what you normally do. And it's one of the reasons why I think we were quite impacted by COVID as well, because it's, you know, I remember just being so jealous of the runners and the cyclists during lockdown, because they could go out and run, they could go out and cycle, you could still keep some form of training. You know, there's only so much, you can't really splash around in a bath, you know, it's kind of the closest thing. And there's not really much you can do on land that replicates being in the water. So I was trying to find like little bits when I was going through my sort of junior years as a swimmer and even into senior years. But for me, Pilates was a huge thing, because there was no point trying to be super muscular. I find it really difficult to put muscle on. So, you know, you've got your form that goes through the water, and it's all about trying to be hydrodynamic. So if you want to get strong, and if you put lots of muscle bulk on, you're then going to have to increase your power, because there's more of you going through the water. So it's almost like trying to get like a gymnastic strength of keeping your form, but being as strong, as powerful as you can, because water is obviously denser than air. So you've got to be able to pull yourself through. And my dad was my coach, and I just loved his way of thinking. He always thought outside the box. He was a helicopter pilot, so his understanding of like mechanics and aerodynamics, and he was saying that when he flies over the North Sea into the oil rigs, you know, if they've got the helicopter, you've got the wing mirrors at the side, and he says if you just turn them in, it takes like 3 minutes off flight time. And that's literally just turning in the wing mirrors. So it was always about, in swimming, obviously we're not helicopters in the air, but the principle was, if you can reduce your drag it'll help in the long run for your swimming. So for us, it was always about the technique. Okay, I don't have the advantage of super long arms or super long legs, but I need to be as efficient as I can. So we would always focus around efficiency and technique. And as I say, I was always quite competitive anyway. So the drive and motivation part, I kind of naturally had.
Yeah.
Amazing. Love that. And it was predominantly individual medley that you raced. So what was it that got you into that specific discipline?
Nobody else wanted to do that event. It's not a nice event. My main event when I was younger was butterfly, like a 200 butterfly. Again, I was one of these weird kids where it's just like, I want to be tough. I'm going to do the hardest event that you can do. And nobody liked doing the 200 fly at the age of 12. No. But I guess as well, being quite small, I just felt like I maybe stayed at the surface of the water a lot more and found it a lot easier. And we had this rule of, well, if I qualify for an event, I swim it. And I got to a competition where I literally qualified for every single race possible. So I raced everything, like literally every race you could think of. I was knackered by the end of the competition, but I did it. And the thing is, there weren't many other swimmers that would actually do that. So again, I felt that set me apart from everybody and I loved it. And just that endurance, I knew as much as I would love to have been a sprinter, there wasn't a hope in hell's chance I was going to be good as a sprinter because I didn't have the height, I didn't have the muscle strength, I just didn't have the explosive power. But what I did have was the endurance and the stamina. So I kind of found that the 400 IM, the chances of me making a final in 400 IM were much higher than what it would be for a sprint event. So I thought, well, there's more opportunity there. And same with the 200 fly, because you sign up for like maybe a 50 or 100 front crawl and you've got about 20 heats. But 200 fly and 400 IM, you've got about 3 heats. So there's a lot less swimmers to contend with. So the chances of either making a podium or being in a final were significantly higher. So I kind of found, well, I'll do those events because nobody else wants to do them. And I just kind of found I naturally fit in it. Some events as well, there's like a set shape as well. Some swimmers for backstroke have incredibly longer limbs. Breaststrokers tend to be quite stocky and powerful and explosive in their legs. Butterfly swimmers tend to have a longer torso. Whereas medley, there wasn't a set shape because it depended on what your strengths were within the strokes. And for me, I kind of felt like it fit. I didn't have the size or strength for being, you know, a specific butterfly swimmer or a freestyle swimmer, but I could put all four strokes together and be reasonably good. So it just kind of went from there. So it was about the age of 14, 15 that I started focusing a bit more on the medley because I was starting to qualify more frequently for other events. Still kept other events going because I always felt that they were an opportunity and they helped support my 400 IM. But yeah, the 400 IM just kind of naturally came to me and yeah, stuck with it.
No, love that. And looking back on your career now with all the incredible things that you did, do you have like a fondest memory from your swimming time?
There's probably two, and they're very much at like opposite ends of the spectrum. There was Glasgow in 2014, home Commonwealth Games, and then being able to successfully defend my title was very, very cool. I was under a huge amount of pressure, but to kind of come away with a bit of history, and I think I was the third out of her female athlete to successfully defend a title. So I got to be there with Liz McColgan and Helen McKay. Wow. So that was quite cool. And I'll never forget the last 50 meters, I tumble turned and pushed off the wall and I could hear the crowd underwater. Like it's hard to hear underwater. Like if your head's above the water, you can hear people cheering, whistling or whatever it is. But underwater, like the noise, you don't realize actually, you just don't hear much. So to hear the noise of the crowd, like still gives me goosebumps to this day, like carried me home. So for me, that was like a really proud moment. A, because I'd overcome sort of probably one of the hardest years, I think, for my ego and mentally as well, just trying to come to terms with all this pressure and doubting myself an awful lot. And I was very fortunate that my family, my team were really supportive and being like, you've got this, it's fine. And it all just came together at the right point. And the other one as well was Rio in 2016, which probably a lot of people think, well, you know, gold medal 2014, that makes a lot of sense. But for Rio, I missed an Olympic medal by 1/1000ths of a second. I came fourth. And it was probably one of the hardest moments of my life because I felt that I needed this medal to prove that I was good enough, to prove that I was worthy of being a good swimmer or a good athlete. And, you know, you're on the plane to go into the Olympic Games with the aim of, I want to try and be on the podium. You know, you don't just go for the ride of it. didn't just go for, you know, oh, I've made it, that's it, you know, sack everything off. And, you know, it was a really quite powerful moment, because I remember when I finished, and it was one of the best times I'd ever done at an Olympic Games. Like, it was faster than what I did in London, faster than what I did in Beijing. But it was agonizing, just because, like, you know, 1/1500ths of a second was the difference to not being on the podium and being on the podium. And I remember finishing and just dealing with all this emotion, because it was very much Jekyll and Hyde. It was like up here 1 minute and then down here the next, when I realized I was fourth. And the first person I spotted in the crowd who stood up and put both their arms up in the air was my dad, like literally just arms up. And there is a picture of me, actually, my face is a mixture of emotions, yeah. But I respond to him. And I knew that everything was going to be okay after seeing him. And I knew that, you know, I couldn't have given it any more. And actually looking back at it, it was probably one of my proudest moments, because as hard as it was, it defined me in a way that I realized that you don't need the medals to prove how good you are. Yes, they're great. You know, and athletes live for it, because that's the whole point of like success in a sense of sport. But success is more than just the medals. And it took me a couple of years to figure that out. And actually, I kind of fondly tell that story because I feel it makes me more human. You know, telling the gold medal stories almost makes you feel inhuman, like untouchable and almost superhuman, which is cool. But also the moments of where you just miss it, you know, that people can kind of relate to it, and actually makes me realize that I am still human. I am still Hannah. Yes, I'm Hannah the swimmer, but I'm also Hannah the person. And I genuinely, no matter how many times I replay the race in my head, there was no other way for me to swim it and get a better result than that fourth place. There were three other girls who happened to be better than me on that day. And it really hit home, that sort of perspective of, well, I did everything that I could. And for me, that was good enough. So yeah, both of those, as I say, opposite ends of the spectrum, but both of them for me are kind of like my kind of poignant moments in my career.
I think coming fourth is probably everyone's worst nightmare, I guess. It is that horrible position, but I think that's such an important story and message to tell, especially for youngsters coming through, that yeah, the medals are important, but actually look at the context and of that race and yeah, the times that you've produced and things. No, that's, yeah, that is really special, actually. Okay, so you mentioned so different Hannahs. You're also Hannah the MBE. How did this come about? How did you feel when you got, I'm assuming it was a letter, that you'd be on the Queen's Honours list. Like, how did that come about?
So I just got this letter, and I initially thought I was in a lot of trouble, because it arrived at my mum and dad's place. Because we'd not long moved into my new house with my husband, and my mum was just like, oh, I've got this letter. It looks very formal. And she took a picture of it, and it had like royal symbols on it and stuff, but I kind of thought it meant like police, or I thought, what have I done? So I took it and I was like, I don't really want to open this in front of everybody in case I'm in like a lot of trouble. And I'm trying to go through my head, be like, did I go through a red light? I don't think I did. Am I in a lot? So I opened it up and then I read it, and then I like burst into tears, because it was like, you'd seen all the Olympic gold medalists that had like, or medalists from Tokyo getting awarded their MBEs. And I kind of felt like, oh, well, you have to have won an Olympic medal in order to get the MBE. I know there's obviously other routes, but I guess as an athlete, you felt like, well, I didn't get an Olympic medal, therefore I'm not going to get an MBE sort of thing. So somebody had nominated me with all that I'd done, I guess, throughout my career and representatives supporting my country, Scotland and GB. But also the work that I'd done during lockdown with supporting young girls in sport, not just in swimming, just trying to kind of help talk about like menstrual health and female health. And just basically you got very, very passionate about that. And yeah, that was good enough to be awarded an MBE. So it was, I'm still kind of shocked with it. So I collect it in July this year. So it would be quite cool to go to Edinburgh to go and get that. Yeah, still feels very, very surreal.
Amazing. So, so cool.
No, incredible. Yes, yeah, so well deserved.
Oh, thank you.
So another thing that we wanted to get you on the podcast to talk about was the periods and the Say Period campaign. So it's something that we definitely wanted to speak about on the podcast. It's something that's really topical in our sport at the moment, rugby, with teams not wearing white shorts and changing that up and things like that. So yeah, I guess, can you tell us about the Say Period campaign and why it's important to you?
So the Well HQ came up with the hashtag say, call it what it is, period, basically trying to break down the barrier and the stigma surrounding periods and menstruation. And for me, it was kind of a personal journey. As I say, during COVID, I was very fortunate enough to get in contact with Georgie Brunewals, and she basically just blew my mind with actually how much I didn't know about my body. When I was a teenager, I really suffered and struggled with my period. And at the time, I was told to just go on the pill because that would just fix my problem. And that was it. And I kind of thought, well, you know, the 21 days that you're on the pill, you're not on your period, you come off the pill. Oh, that's my period. No, I didn't realize that's called a withdrawal bleed. So for 15 years, I've technically not had a period. So it explains why I couldn't put any muscle mass on, because being on the pill does suppress your ability to produce natural testosterone. So it explains as well why I guess I was quite, I mean, it wouldn't affect my height anyway, but it would affect why I guess I was quite a slight swimmer. And just going through all the little things with Georgie, I realized there's so much information actually that when you look at it from a society perspective, that there is a lot of barriers with it. So with my dad being my coach, I could never tell him I was on my period. It was always, oh, it's that time of the month, and, you know, just subtly under my breath. And the campaign for me, I think, really resonated, because it's just like, there's like 5,000 euphemisms out there to call your period. It's like, why not just call it your period? Just keep it simple and just say it. Because the more we say it, the more likely we're going to get comfortable with saying it, the more we can normalize it, and the easier it is to talk about it. And it's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, it's a normal, natural process, but it's so important. So for me, I kind of feel that it's important to put out that a period is like a health report every month. It's your body's way of telling you what's in balance, how you're doing. And if you know how to read your body, you can use it to your advantage and work with your body. But at the minute, there's a lot of negativity surrounding it, and society kind of has capitalized on it. So you've got specific period pain targeting, you know, medications that kind of supposedly eradicate cramps, which was just ibuprofen, but is marked up at, like, you know, 3.5 times the price of ibuprofen. You know, it's things like that. It's like the pink tax kind of thing. You know, when you look at adverts, Bodyform, I think it was in 2021, they were the first company to actually showcase on TV red liquid for period products, not blue liquid. And again, that in itself, you know, if you're seeing blue liquid on an advert, you can't really relate to it. So already as a young, you know, influenced teenager, you're kind of maybe already isolated, because it's like, well, I don't bleed blue liquid. How can I relate to that? So there's always this kind of secrecy about it, that you couldn't talk about it. And I feel that periods should be private, not secret. So private in a sense that it's up to you who you tell. You don't have to tell people, you don't have to shout it out from the rooftops, but you shouldn't feel like you can't talk about it. And that's where I was like, it's not a secret in a sense that you cannot tell people. Even adverts where it's like, oh, we make these tampons that are really small, you can stick them up your sleeve or hide them in a small pocket. I mean, not that you're going to go around and swing tampons around when you're walking about, but, you know, it's like you're already being told, oh, you've got to make them discreet and small, and they've got deodorizing things on it. Oh, God, do I smell? You know, it's things that you're already made to feel, when actually those things aren't really true. And, you know, and again, it kind of makes you feel isolated. So the Call It What It Is campaign was people pledging to sort of call it, you know, say what it is. It's a period. And the more people we can get comfortable, and it's not just you know, those who menstruate to call it, it's everybody, because everybody deals with someone who menstruates at some point in their life. You know, it's it affects everybody in some shape or form. So for me, the campaign was really good in just getting that conversation out there to just be normalized and talk about it. And it was interesting seeing the responses for it. There were some that were really good. There were some that were kind of interesting. Like, I think Sky Sports had put up a little bit about it, but they actually turned their comments off. Which I thought was interesting, because I think if it wasn't football related, a lot of the comments coming through were quite negative. So, you know, we are kind of still got a lot of barriers that we can kind of break down, but, you know, it's progressing so much more. And the one thing that, you know, the Well HQ have been really good is getting the statistics out there. So out of all the sports science research, only 6% of it has been done on female athletes. So there's,
that's wild.
Usually wild. So there's still a lot about the female body that we don't know. And also, I think there's a study going on at University of Aberdeen at the minute with the impact of concussion at certain phases within your cycle for athletes, like in rugby, so that if you have a head-on collision, recovery time can be impacted depending on where you are in your phase, the severity of the concussion as well. So that protocols and recovery plans can be put in place that's effective and keeps the athletes safe and healthy. So for me, I think it's so important to learn how to work with your body, but know how to, for you to feel healthy, because my ultimate aim, one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about it, is that I want female athletes to have their career for as long as they want it to be, to not feel like they're being held back by their hormones, to feel like they're not being hindered. But also when they finish and leave the sport, they are still healthy. And it's not just, oh, well, I'm active, I'm healthy already. It's like, well, no, if you're having a regular period, you don't have severe period cramps. That's another thing as well. Period cramps, you're kind of told it's, you know, oh, it's a normal thing, but it's not. You know, it's not. And it's, there's certain things that can influence it. So if you increase like your omega-3 intake the week leading into your period, you can significantly reduce the severity of your period cramps. Like, your cramps should not stop you from doing your daily activities. If it does, then that's what I call a red flag. And a lot of the menstrual dysfunctions aren't talked about. You hear about endometriosis and PCOS and amenorrhea, red S, but it's knowing how can you spot the signs, and coaches, can they spot the signs within their athletes so that you can action on it. You know, like, it takes 7 years for someone to get diagnosed with endo. So, you know, we've still got a long way to go with recognizing and understanding the physiological impacts these dysfunctions have and how we can support, so that whether you've got endometriosis or red S, you can still, you know, take part in your sport and remain healthy and not push your body to the point where it breaks. And for me, one athlete I was hugely inspired by was Bobby Clay. Her story was very upfront and honest at the Telegraph, where she world junior champion and, you know, tipped to be like, you know, the next kind of big thing in British athletics. And she never started her period. Like, her coach knew, support staff knew, but, you know, it was all about performance. And by the time she was 19, she was diagnosed with full blown osteoporosis and having to be put on HRT. So that was, you know, her career kind of done. So it's trying to protect athletes so that they don't ever get put in that position, and understand that periods are not the enemy of performance. They actually can be really beneficial, and there's certain good things within it. But mm-hmm. if I say the word period to you, what words come to your head? Very rarely will it be something positive. I only had somebody say one positive word, and that was chocolate. Most of the time it's blood, pain, tired, stress, fatigue, hell week, leak week, you know, all those kind of things. It's never anything positive. So trying to change the narrative and create a bit of period positivity around it, you know, can be helpful. So it's not something that's dreaded, but understood a bit more, so that it can be managed and you can work with your body rather than against it. So the campaign was really, really good, and just getting that message out there. And the Well HQ have got a book out now called The Female Body Bible, which again gives you an insight to all aspects on female health, not just menstruation. You've got breast health as well, making sure that you're fitted with the correct sports bra. I kind of thought, oh, small, medium and large, you know, that's kind of what it is. But the impact it can have on the muscles within your chest, that if you do not get it fitted right, you can cause a lot of damage and injury. Same with shoe sizes. A lot of companies, their shoes are not designed for female feet. It's just basically a smaller version of what the men's feet are. And again, biomechanically, females move differently to males because our skeletal structure is different. So it's trying to kind of get these companies on board to design and develop these products to fit the female anatomy so that it's supportive. And the book's been really, really helpful. And there's quite a few other books that I follow. I use the menstrual tracking app Fitter Women as well, which has been really helpful just to know where you're at, because mm-hmm. the best way in the world, there's nothing worse than being like, when is your next period? Oh, I'm not sure. So at least, you know, if you've got a bit of a heads up, you can plan it. And as an athlete, you know, you've got everything organized. You want to know, you don't want any surprises. It then allows you to just map your nutrition, map your recovery strategies and all that. So yeah, as you can tell, I can talk about this for hours because I'm so passionate, hugely excited about it, because it's so cool and fascinating. There's a lot about the female body that I think we don't know about, or for me, I want to help people understand. So it's about just unlocking your superpower, really, and learning to work with your body instead of against it, and keeping that positivity. So that especially young girls, you know, by the end of puberty, there's a really high number that will drop out of sport. And there's obviously other reasons around it, not just menstruation and sort of puberty. But, you know, if we can keep girls using exercise and activity as a positive that can actually be supportive of your periods, you know, hopefully we can retain a lot more girls in sport.
So is that where your workshops come in? Because you work with a lot of juniors in that. And
yeah,
that's so important, because growing up, again, similar periods where you'd have that thing at time of the month, but actually some of the benefits you can get from them, like there's definitely a week within my cycle that I'm like, I really enjoy the gym. Like I'm pushing up good numbers. And then the other few months I'm like, I hate the gym because this is my weakness. But things like that, but also things about knowing the contraceptions you can use and how that might impact your training. Because there's been a bit of research, if you're on the, what is it? Maybe if you have the implant, that it can potentially negatively impact performance. But whether that research has been followed up and supported, I actually don't know enough about it, but it's so fascinating.
Yeah, it is. And I think as well, like, I don't tell people you can't go on contraceptive pill, because it, everyone's got their own reasons for going on it. But I think it's important to know the whole picture, because what the contraceptive pill does is it stops your body giving you the signals of your regular cycle. So if you are having incredibly bad cramps leading into your period, or your period is really heavy more than normal, or you start earlier, your body is giving you signals, whether it's an imbalance of nutrients, whether it's stress, whether it's not enough sleep. When you're on contraceptive, your body doesn't give you that. So it masks a lot of these signs and symptoms that your body naturally tells you. And the risks of going into red S or hitting problems can be huge, because your body's not able to naturally tell you what's happening to you. And it can mask a lot of problems, which then can lead to greater problems down the line. But also the fact that it is synthetic hormones that you are taking or putting into your body or having, you know, it implanted in. So it's not your body's natural producing hormones, which then can have a massive impact on weight gain or bloating or mood swings. So it does affect you in some shape or form. I was fortunate enough that the pill I was on, I felt, didn't really affect me as badly as some others could. But my body struggled to naturally produce testosterone, which meant that I did get ill more frequently. I did end up with lots of like little niggles and injuries and kind of bits that I picked up along the way. I was quite, not frail, definitely I wasn't as robust, because as soon as I took myself off the pill during COVID, it was probably the most robust my body had ever been and the strongest I'd ever been in the gym. So it was really interesting seeing that difference and actually tracking what changes happened with my body. And my body did change shape, because before I was just straight up and down. Whereas then as soon as I came off it, I found that I started developing a bit more of a shape. And I think it's important to understand, so whatever reason you choose to go on it, you still support your body through good rest and nutrition, good sleep, good recovery strategies, so that even though you can't really pick up maybe on the normal signs and symptoms that your body gives you, you're still supporting your body. And naturally as well, without the contraceptive, like you throughout the, so however long your cycle is, when you're on your period, your hormones are flat. Like your testosterone is higher than all the other hormones, so it's probably the one time where you're more like male individuals, which is kind of ironic. So like our pain tolerance is much higher. You might feel awful or mentally feel awful, but actually you can perform really well. But sometimes it's our headspace that can kind of maybe hold us back a little bit. But after our period, you've got a really big spike in your estrogen, which then is what I call your bulletproof phase or your superhuman phase, where you feel great. Like your mood is up, everything's positive. It's like bright and sunshine. You can like, yeah, this is great. And then normally it's like the week before your period starts, when everything's dropping down, inflammation is higher. And that's when things can feel a bit heavier and a bit harder. So it's being able to map strategies that whatever phase that your body is in, you can match it with good nutrition, sleep. As I say, I'm keep repeating the same things, but it is so important, those things. Because I did a little, I wouldn't say intentional experiment, but not long after I came off the pill, when I started getting a bit more regular with my natural period, between Christmas and New Year, I was in phase four. So it was like the phase just before I was about to start my period. So I was due to start just after New Year. And I went all in with the food, like chocolate cake, chocolate log, you know, like fried chicken, like everything, all the kind of like processed foods. And, you know, I was loving life because I just thought I'm going to enjoy Christmas. I was woken up with the worst period cramps I have ever experienced after New Year. And it was purely down to what I'd eaten. And that was when I realized, right, okay, nutrition is quite key here for managing cramping and actually my experience of when I'm on my period. So for being on your period, it's all about planning beforehand. As I say, making sure you reduce your processed foods, keep refined sugars, you know, down, because your body naturally craves those things because your hormones are going down. You want that spike, so that's why you crave like your chocolate, your sweets, your ice cream, because your body's like, nah, I want these hormones back, give me something positive and happy to look forward to. So that's why everyone's like, oh, you know, you crave the big bar of chocolate sort of thing, because you feel great afterwards, but it'll make your symptoms or PMS symptoms so much worse.
Yeah,
and it's those little bits, and that's what I mean when you're at school, I kind of feel you're not taught how to read your body. It's, you're not on your period, you might be pregnant. You are on your period, you're not pregnant. And, you know, and it is periods and menstruation, it's all about, you know, the reproductive energy system. But from a sporting perspective, it's the energy required. So if you have a regular period, your body has the energy to have the reproductive cycle go, which is important. Obviously, the last thing I remind is probably having babies, but it's, that's why I'm saying it's like a sign of health. So as soon as you push your body to the point where it stops having a period, your body is shutting off a vital part of you because it doesn't have enough energy. And that's where it should be a big red flag that that's not normal. Not pushing your body to the point where you don't have a period is not normal. And it's important for you to realize that maybe your body's craving more energy. It's not necessarily like more food, but your energy output is surpassing your energy input. So getting that balance, I think, is really, really key. So, yeah.
That's incredible. That's so informative. And I think for anybody listening, like, it's, we don't talk about periods, so I think it's so important to have that conversation and to get that information.
Yeah, there's lots of great resources out there as well. So I know the Well HQ have partnered up with Team England Netball. So there's a website called netballher.co.uk, and it's great. There's loads of videos that talks about contraception, pill, like the different medications and the impact it has. There's like menstruation 101, menstruation resilience, and all sorts of bits. So it's really, really helpful. And Georgie Brunovels as well has helped create like a podcast called Female Athlete Podcast, which again talks all things female health. So it's getting those kind of resources out there so that people feel like you're not on your own. There's bits of information, and it's the right information as well that you're listening to. Yeah.
Super, super interesting. Oh, I actually could listen to you like speak about it, and you're like taking pearls, like, oh, maybe I could find
out. Yeah, I was like, no teacher.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Cool. So final little bit that we want to get into is we've asked all our guests to finish this sentence. So success means?
Ooh. For me, success means feeling like I've accomplished more than what I intended. Not medals, not personal best times, the small process goals of reaching that point. Very waffly. But actually, it's something that I've kind of redefined, especially since Rio, realizing that success is more than just medals. It's whether it's feeling happy at the end of a race, whether it's feeling like, you know what, I did 3 fly kicks off each turn. It's finding that little process goal that you've been working on and knowing that you've achieved it or worked your way towards it. So yeah.
No, I really like that. I think that's so important as well, especially when like your bigger goals maybe don't go to plan, you still have achieved, and what you've been working towards for months, years has been worth it because you've done these things.
Yeah. One of the biggest things that's completely out with our control is actually the outcome at the end of a match or race. You have no control over your rivals or your competitors. You've only got control of what you can do and how you actuate your race plan or match strategy. And success is being able to know that you've achieved that regardless of what the outcome is.
Love it. Okay, final thing then, this or that, literally 5 quick fire questions just to get to know you a little bit better. So tea or coffee?
Oh, neither.
Neither. Hot chocolate gal.
or orange juice.
Orange juice.
So question two, Android or iPhone?
I've had both. I'll probably go iPhone.
Yeah, fair. Conditioning or weight?
Ooh, conditioning.
Hmm. Night in or night out?
Night in.
And then final one, don't know if you're into star signs, but Aquarius or Libra?
Ooh. Oh, this is going to be like picking between you two, isn't it? This could be dangerous. I'm a Leo and my husband is a Sagittarius, so I'll go Libra.
Fair.
Sorry. Fair.
Oh, thank you so much for coming to the podcast. Absolutely loved that chat. Loved to hear about your career. Loved, yeah, to have a chat about PE. So, yeah, that was amazing. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. Anything you believe you can be.